Chapter 12. Charlie. Charlie winced and covered her ears as she walked down the hallway of the V's Tower. The sound of construction was grating, but at least they were almost done. The windows had been replaced, the halls and rooms cleared of blood and bodies, and now they were simply repairing and replacing broken floorboards and holes in the walls and ceiling. Marcus had told her this morning that they'd be done by the end of the week, though, so she willed herself to simply grit her teeth and ignore it. Razzle floated by her shoulder and looked curiously at the lowborn hellhounds and imps working side by side with the sinners putting the broken building together again, their eyes darting back to their work when they met Charlie's even for a moment. For a while after her big speech in the center of town, when she was working with the V's to get together a little council of like-minded individuals to help put hell back together again, the Hellborn had seemed just as excited about it as the sinners, but their unsteady support had waned as her policies became more clearly defined. Hellborn were of hell, and hell alone, and as such, they seemed to know only one way of life. Liberated. Loose, free to do as they willed and engage in whatever hedonistic pursuits they wished, at the expense of whatever was in their way. That had all been well and good when hell had just been a place for the wicked to be exiled after death, but Charlie's vision was more than that. Before, she had wanted to redeem people, to help them and guide them to a better, happier life in heaven. She'd grown up on her dad's stories of heaven, how beautiful and sweet and perfect it was, and when she'd gone before, for the trial before the extermination, it had been even better than she'd dreamed. Beautiful, idyllic and peaceful, with so many happy faces all around, she'd wanted to make sure that everyone got to enjoy its beauty. After that, after the events of Adam's Purge, the facade had dropped. When they'd brought her there before the archangels and Sarah, she had seen the detached pity behind the sorry expressions and the judgment that was at the heart of every sad expression that passed their falsely kind eyes. Charlie was queen now, and she would be a queen for the people, her people. And her people didn't need to go there, to that den of hypocrites and vipers, who thought they were so perfect, it gave them the right to step on whoever they wanted. If they had been sent to hell, why not stay? Why not make the most of it? Not only would it give Charlie the power to demand that heaven hold Adam responsible, but as queen, she could make the dream of redemption come true down here. Her word was law, and just because hell was the place of the wicked and damned, didn't mean it always had to stay that way. The bedrock of her dream still existed under the surface of her plan for the future. But now it was refined. A vision that took full advantage of the power that Charlie Morningstar now held in the palm of her hand. She would provide the means to improvement right here in hell. She would help them realize that if they worked to build a better future, rather than numb the suffering and misery of the present with useless distractions like drugs, gang wars, and rampant, unchecked hedonism, things could be good. Just as good as heaven. Maybe even better. But she couldn't do it. Charlie knew that she'd need a lot of help, and as she approached the double doors of the V's main conference room in their tower, she prepared to address her first volunteers. Opening the door, she adjusted her tie and took a deep breath, taking in the diverse array of allies that had assembled to support her. The tower had been badly damaged after Adam's little bitches had trashed the place, but the exorcists had never gotten to this room. It was deep in the V's private quarters of the tower, which had gone mostly untouched as the angels had focused on the crowds of easy prey in the office portion of the building. It was a large, rather formal conference hall painted in navy and azure blue, the smooth floor made of murky obsidian, chased with veins of raw lapis lazuli. The central feature of the room was a wide, black glass table, glossy and shining under a harsh overhead lamp with a stylized V etched into the surface, colored in bright blue and red. Razzle made an excited little chirp and flew over to rest on the back of the chair set at the far end of the table, where Charlie was to sit. Spaced evenly along the table's length, sat her counsel. Vox sat at her left hand, in slacks and a blue and red striped vest, his navy sports coat ironed and immaculate. His screen face had been repaired and his body had healed remarkably quickly over the past week. Though he was still a little under the weather, and sometimes winced when standing from a chair or making a sharp movement, his face had stopped glitching out, and his voice had gone back to normal, which was a relief. He'd been very taxing to speak with when you had to parse the words through sparks and static. Velvet was at her right, flipping through her phone, staring intently into its screen and, judging by the expression, not exactly happy with what she was seeing. When she looked up and saw Charlie had entered, she placed the phone face down on the table and steepled her fingers, the shadow of a smile crossing her features as she gave Charlie a respectful nod. Vox and Velvet had been her first advocates, and with the V's Tower being a central location in Pentagram City, Charlie had felt it was a natural point from which to establish her fledgling reign. With the V's help, Charlie had spent the last week recruiting sinners to do the day-to-day work it would take to make her vision a reality. She remembered learning about the leaders of the nations of humans when her father had tutored her as a girl. And there was one thing above all, which practically every human civilization had in common. Rulers had councils, confidants, advisors, people who helped make sure everything ran smoothly and efficiently. People who had a presence and gravitas that inspired others to work for their liege's ideas. For as long as Charlie could remember, Lucifer had never bothered with anything like that. He would ignore his realm and the plight of the wayward souls that inhabited the pentagram. As long as she'd been alive, whenever Charlie would ask her dad about the sinners, he would change the subject. Eventually, she'd realize that he just didn't want to think about them. The guilt was too much. Charlie wasn't going to be like that. She wanted to take responsibility for her mistakes and those of her father. Dad had messed up, but she would be different. Under her leadership, hell would be happy. Hell would be peaceful. And above all else, hell would be home. The Has-Been Hotel had been a way to free people from the suffering they so deeply felt down here. Yet now, with Charlie at the helm, she could end suffering at the source. With some help, of course. In addition to Velvet and Vox, there was the lone Carmine, Odette, at one end of the table. She had freshened up and composed herself in the time since the Great Purge, and now she seemed almost relaxed. Her blonde hair had been done up in a tight bun, red eyes silently scanning the papers she had arrayed in front of her, straightening them with a smooth motion before looking up expectantly at Charlie. She had on a pristine white lab coat over tight black slacks. The modest dress and calm, composed demeanor she was known for was back, though there were bags under her eyes behind the red glasses. And in her recent grief, she seemed to slump somewhat at her seat. Rosie sat across the table from her. Her modest, ladylike red and black formal dress had that signature turn-of-the-century charm that she'd shared Alistair's love for. And despite a nasty scar across one cheek, she was unchanged from the events of Adam's assault on the pentagram. Physically, at least. However, the death of so many cannibals at the exorcist's hands had taken its toll on her disposition and influence. And she smiled less, sounding a touch less confident and self-assured when she spoke. Regardless, she'd been eager to help rebuild what was lost when Vox and Velvet had reached out to her at Charlie's request, and the cannibal woman didn't seem to hold a grudge for the losses that her little slice of hell had sustained, in being the only ones to stand with Charlie. The sacking that Cannibal Town had suffered was heartbreaking. And Charlie felt awful for it, but Rosie insisted that she shouldn't blame herself. That was something the daughter of the Morning Star was deeply grateful for. It helped keep the resentment she felt towards those who had hung her out to dry from overwhelming her good nature. Some had stood with her, and those that survived still believed in her mission. It was as humbling as it was inspiring. It was a small council, especially for one as presumably important as the Queen of Hell itself, but they would have to do, for now.
"Good morning, everyone," Charlie said, taking her seat at the head of the table and taking a deep breath.
Razzle flew upward from her chair and landed in her lap as she sat down. Charlie gently pet him behind his horns as she spoke. The impish little demon's warmth and familiarity helped still her nervously racing heart. This was a big moment. First impressions mattered a lot. And though the V's had grown to respect her, Rosie and Odette, she didn't know all that well. If they were to be her direct underlings, this first addressing would be important, both to setting the tone of her rule and to getting her allies to take her seriously as a leader.
"I'd like to thank you all for being here and for being a part of what I'm trying to build," she said, looking around the table with a polite smile. "You don't know me very well, and I appreciate that each of you are taking a risk in backing me, but I promise that you won't regret it."
There was an awkward pause, and Charlie cleared her throat before continuing.
"So, does anyone have any questions before we begin? Any concerns or objections?"
There was a pause, and just when Charlie was about to move on, Rosie lifted her hand.
"Yes, Rosie?"
Charlie asked.
"Well, I guess I was just wondering. Where's Alistair?"
She smiled nervously as Charlie felt her heart drop into her stomach.
"Yeah, now that you mention it, where is the radio demon?" Vox asked, a predatory grin stretching across his broad, flat face.
"Did Adam really do him in? I've just got to know how that exchange ended. I haven't been able to come all week."
"Oh, for fuck's sakes, Vox."
Velvet looked disgusted and buried her head in her hands, but he ignored her. Charlie took in a deep breath. She felt shame to know that she'd almost forgotten about Alistair and what happened to him. What could she tell them? That he was dragged away by the first man to who knows what end? Dragged away to be tortured or worse, until he was finally allowed to die for daring to stand against Adam's wrath? That wouldn't be the way Alistair had wanted to be remembered. He'd wanted to be feared and respected. His reputation had always mattered more to him than anything, from the way his eyes would twitch when Angel made a pass at him, or the slight widening of his smile when he inspired fear in Husk, or awe in Nifty. Rosie opened her mouth, probably to inquire further, as Charlie had been quiet for some time. But before she could speak, the newly crowned queen found her voice.
"Alistair fought Adam and disappeared. Adam mentioned that he escaped the combat with his shadow magic, and they couldn't find him."
The lie was hard to tell, but she avoided eye contact by staring down into Razzle's red fur and petting gently, so as not to risk a lapsing expression betray the falsehood.
"I looked for him in the rubble of the hotel afterwards, but I couldn't find his body. Alistair could have fled somewhere else, or died of his injuries out there in the wastes beyond Pendergram City. I don't know. I'm sorry."
Rosie's lip quivered, and silently she hid her scarred face behind trembling fingers and made a muffled, pitiful sob.
"Oh, Alistair, if he's out there, I hope he finds his way back to us. If he ain't..."
Her gaze drifted down to the floor beneath her seat, and she sighed.
"I'll really miss that dandy old Chama."
Vox's face was so shocked and so motionless, it was as if the surprise of Charlie's words had somehow made his internal systems crash due to shock. His hand was on the desk, clenched tightly, and then his face stuttered with static for a moment, before breaking into a vicious grin. Charlie glared at him in warning, looking pointedly at Rosie, who was drying her eyes with a handkerchief, and Vox just barely managed to contain his glee. She made a mental note to ask the media-centric overlord later exactly what had transpired between him and Alistair to make them hate each other so much. The feeling had indeed been mutual, as Charlie remembered vividly whenever Vox's name would chance to be mentioned by anyone within his earshot, or whenever Alistair would happen to hear the flat-faced V's voice on the television in the lobby, his smile would threaten to turn into a grimace. It would only be for an instant, but Charlie at least had noticed it. To leave such an impression on the radio demon that it tarnished his perfect grin, their dispute must have been severe indeed. There was a moment of silence at the revelation of Alistair's alleged death. Velvet didn't seem all that affected, only seeming to have frowned slightly in disapproval at Vox's fixation upon the mysterious dandy man of a reigning overlord, and Odette had only blinked slightly in surprise, before seemingly moving on without a care. Charlie allowed the quiet to stretch on for about a minute, before clearing her throat quietly and with quiet, dignified conviction, beginning the proceedings.
"If that's all, I'd like to get to business,"
Charlie said as courteously as she could manage, before turning away from Rosie and Vox.
"For this first meeting, I want to expand upon our initial attempts at population control and civil unrest, and make changes as necessary. Velvet, where are we when it comes to general expansion? How open are the Pentagram's people to our new ideas, and have you had any problems so far in bringing the chaos under control?"
The fashionista overlord set down her phone and bit her lip.
"Well, Queen Morningstar, as you know, a lot of sinners were on board with your idea at first, and we had a lot of enthusiastic support and encouragement. I was able to recruit several dozen who've started repairing and rebuilding the destroyed sections of the city, but..."
Charlie's hopeful and exuberant grin twitched, and she raised an eyebrow.
"But,"
the young queen asked hesitantly.
"But this is still hell,"
Vox interjected, in a quiet, mockingly sing-song tone. Velvet gave him a slightly irritated frown, but sighed and nodded.
"Like Vox says, this is still hell. A lot of the older sinners more set in their ways haven't seemed interested in all you had to say. The Hellborn, well, they've been living like this since, well, since forever. Selfishness and stagnation are kind of the vibe around here,"
she said with a shrug.
"Well, have the Hellborn ever been different?"
Odette asked.
"Can we really not do anything to compel the demons born here in hell to listen to us?"
"No, they're right,"
Rosie answered with certainty.
"It's just against the nature of hell. The ones born here are of here. Hell's nature, it's in their blood, their souls. You can't just change millennia of tradition overnight."
As Velvet and Vox joined the discussion, Charlie began to contemplate. She frowned, deep in thought, looking around at her council discussing, and took in their words, letting them speak, weighing them against each other to see what made the most sense, as she listened quietly. She had discussed the details of her personal plans and hopes with Vox and Velvet last week, when they'd first decided to work together. The idea of making hell more orderly, manageable, building people up through hard work, first at putting the city back together, then by doing normal jobs, running businesses without violent rivalries, staying out of gang conflict and stopping those who didn't. She would encourage her people in keeping their noses clean, paying taxes, a suggestion that made Vox visibly cringe, and generally dedicating themselves to a better life, not just for themselves, but for everyone stuck down here, everyone who had been cast down and spat on by the angels above. Their reactions had been less than encouraging, to put it mildly. Vox had laughed out loud so hard he almost shorted himself out, and only Velvet's glare had seemed to calm him down, though he still grinned like an idiot whenever she mentioned coming together or building a better hell.
"It would work so well, though,"
she'd said to them, imploringly, trying her best to explain how her vision for the future was completely, objectively, the best way for the people of Hell to live.
"Look, Charlie,"
Velvet began patiently.
"No one's saying that having nice, peaceful lives, working proper jobs, keeping drug use to a minimum, and not killing each other, at every bloody excuse, wouldn't make Hell a more manageable place. It's just that..."
"This is the way things are, sweetheart,"
Vox had said, unable to contain a small chuckle.
"What, you think just because it's logical and makes sense for people to work together, they're going to? I mean, everyone here already had dozens of chances to do that, and they never did.
Us included.
What could change now?"
Charlie had thought about it a long time, and eventually she'd had to tell them that she'd think about it and see what their options were. What could change? How could she make people want to be better? How could she know they would listen? The problem had been gnawing at her for days now, and no matter what she thought of, she knew it wouldn't work. Incentives? People would take them, sure, but what would ensure they'd actually keep to their word? Especially with the city largely in turmoil still, what was to stop them from lying about good deeds or time spent without sinning? She had no way to verify any of it. And even if she could, she didn't have time to help people on the individual level they needed, now that she was a ruler. Force of will? She lacked the numbers to force her will onto the pentagram, even if she'd wanted to. Besides, though Charlie was frustrated with people's past dismissal of her ideas, and though she still chafed at the fact that so many of them had left their princess and her friends to die defending them, Charlie had met too many good, well-meaning, struggling people in the center of the pentagram that day after the purge to be okay with using force to bring them all to heel. She needed to show them that her way was the right way. All that Charlie had to do was just get them to listen. If she could just get them to try, she knew they'd see the merit of her ideas. But how could she compel people to listen to anything? She never had before. It was one of the few things in Hell that was pretty set in stone. When she was much younger and first started to talk to her father about the concept of redemption for all the struggling people who suffered in the big metropolis beneath their estate on the highest hill above the pentagram, Lucifer had explained it. She still remembered her dad's words, gentle and patient, with a firm certainty and sadness that took the wind right out of her sails when she'd first heard it.
"Charlie, sweetums, the sinner's town there, this is what they chose to do. They did as they willed all their lives, and never minded the consequences. They made their choices, no matter how bad they were for them, or how much suffering they caused. They were selfish, greedy, grasping, violent, deceitful. They had every chance to change, and they didn't. If you wanted to redeem them, you'd need to get inside their minds themselves. You'd have to give them an actual desire to be better."
"Vox!"
she shouted suddenly, silencing the polite yet contentious discussion around the table regarding the balance of redemption, tradition, stability, and reform. The screen-faced sinner looked up from his discussion with the table at large to address Charlie.
"What?"
"What are the limits of your hypnotic powers?" she asked.
The Overlord blinked, glanced to Velvet, and then smirked.
"Controlling people is demanding. I can't do it all the time, and definitely not on a scale as large as the whole city. If I could make everyone your puppet, we wouldn't even need to have this discussion, would we, Princess?"
Charlie heard the condescension in his voice, and it snagged on her like a thorn in her ear. But she pressed on.
"Well, what if you didn't make them all puppets? What if it didn't need to go that far?"
Vox hesitated for a moment, his expression becoming thoughtful. As he considered it, the Overlord pressed a button under the table which opened a small compartment in the mirror-polished surface, containing a frosty bottle of dark, rich brown liquor that he poured into a small whiskey glass, casually placing the bottle back on the compartment stand where it sat still for a moment, before sliding back down into the table and disappearing under its surface.
"What are you suggesting?" he said after a sip.
"Well, what if you used your hypnotic abilities to put, I don't know how to put it, maybe a kind of seed of an idea in someone's head?"
Charlie suggested.
"I mean, just a suggestion of an idea in the subconscious, to take those first steps. Many of the sinners are scared and on edge after Adam's rampage, and I know that their first impulse would be to go out and seek vice and indulgences to cope. But what if we could give them a different impulse to seek help with their new queen? We could set them to work with putting stuff back together across Pentagram City, pay them for their work, provide more wholesome products and services for them to focus on. We could build a real functioning city with laws and order and safe streets where people could learn to help each other and make a heaven for themselves out of hell."
There was a silence around the table for a long moment. Vox narrowed his eyes, then began to nod, taking a gulp of his drink.
"Yeah, I could do that. I've already done something similar whenever VoxTech comes out with new products, and it works for that. The problem is that the Exorcist trashed the city real bad. The screens that I would broadcast from, they're almost all shattered or disconnected. The message would have a real hard time getting out, but Velvet and I could send what people we still have to see about getting some of the electricity back online. We got the center of the pentagram already. We could start branching out from there. The problem is all the gangs and violence the further you get from the center of town. It's every demon for themselves out there, and with how violent it is, we don't have the weapons necessary to go out there and get the power back online without risking getting slaughtered. Now, if we had some guns..."
"Well, now hang on a minute,"
Rosie cut in, earning an annoyed look from Vox.
"Got something to say, cannibal?"
he said with a sneer, taking another gulp of liquor as she responded.
"Yes, as a matter of fact, I do. Listen, Charlie, this isn't right. I know you're a very, well, spirited girl, but I've been around a long time, and I've met a lot of the best and baddest demons. There are a lot of powerful people in groups who like hell find the way it is. If you start changing all that, well, there could be consequences. A lot of powerful people, hellborn and overlords both, depend on the sinners and their vices. We already know to watch for the surviving big shots of the pentagram, but that's not all. The Goetians are big players, and even though they usually keep to themselves, if something big changes in Pentagram City and it starts affecting their bottom line, it won't be good for us."
"What do you mean, a Goetian? You talking about those bird-looking freaks?"
Velvet asked.
"They're a bunch of old-timer wankers. They'll bitch and moan, but when was the last time you heard of them making any real trouble? As for the other overlords, who would even challenge us? Zestiel? If he tries anything, 2 V's will do for him as good as 3 would."
Vox grinned at his comrade's words, letting a jolt of jagged electrical current spark between his glowing blue fingertips at the prospect of fighting one as legendary as Zesty.
"Well, it don't matter. Do it,"
Rosie said, crossing her arms.
"You don't have the guns or the goons to go out and make trouble. We'll have to change our policies to be more realistic and moderate."
Charlie sighed, petting Razzle's hair and racking her mind for an answer.
"There has to be a way. Come on, surely someone can think of something."
There was a long pause, and Rosie smiled sadly, but right before she could give Charlie another patronizing, yet well-meaning piece of maternal advice, Odette cleared her throat. The small, blonde demon woman looked into her papers briefly. As everyone else had spoken and discussed the issues at hand earlier, she'd stayed mostly quiet, occasionally asking a question or making a comment in support of one opinion or another.
"Carmine Industries product stockpiles were left mostly intact. There are a few warehouses scattered throughout the city that we won't be able to access, at least not yet. But most of our weapons were stored in a secret storage basement under our HQ building. It's a mile away, and it would be no trouble to transport as many guns as we have hands for to here. Simply give the word, my queen, the petite weaponsmith said to Charlie with a shrug. Velvet looked at her with incredulity.
You toss us at a whole fucking armory under our feet!
Odette smiled with satisfaction and read from her documents. Oh, yes. Let's see here. We have rifles, submachine guns, shotguns, pistols, every type of firearm you could imagine, really. We have grenades, plastic explosive packets, millions upon millions of boxes full to the brim with ammunition and magazines. We've been in the business a long time, ma'am. With all due respect, my mother was probably an established arms dealer down here while you were still spending time in the life before this one.
Velvet's eyes widened in anger, and the hand that lay on the table next to her phone clenched.
Careful, bitch, she hissed.
Don't go pissing me off without mommy, dearest. Guys, we're all on the same side now. There's no need to get nasty with each other,
Charlie interjected, before turning to Odette with a thankful smile. However, the intensity in her eyes betrayed her apprehension.
That's an incredible asset, Odette, but I don't think it's a good idea to start hurting people to get my way. I mean, I want to manage hell better than my father, and improve it, but I don't want to be that kind of ruler.
Velvet scoffed.
Charlie, come on now. You know that plenty of these lowlives aren't eager to listen to reason or sense. Sometimes you have to break a few eggs to make an omelet.
Velvet is right,
Vox said, pausing to sip his drink before continuing nonchalantly.
You needed to be armed and ready for anything on the streets of this city, even before the Purge. And the angels didn't exactly make it better after they had their fucking blood orgy down there.
She sighed and stared down at her shoes. Razzle sat in her lap, curled up and looking at her with soft, adoring eyes. She still remembered the way his face had changed to a dangerous, violent snarl when she faced that creepy creature in the burlap coat, eating the exorcist in the ruins of the hotel. Sometimes violence could be commendable, if it was done to defend someone you loved. Charlie knew there was some merit to Velvet's words. If she was going to enforce some kind of standard of living on the people of Pentagram City, she couldn't just ask them nicely not to attack or steal from those who would be loyal to her. She would need to be able to stop them, by any means necessary, or hers would be a very short reign indeed.
Fine, she said after some hesitation. You can arm your people with the weapons from the Carmine stockpiles.
Velvet smiled with satisfaction, and Vox nodded.
I knew you'd see reason, Charlie,
he said with easy confidence.
I promise we'll put them to good use.
You didn't let me finish, Vox, Charlie said, crossing her arms. You can arm your people with those weapons, yes, but tell them to use them in self-defense only, and never to use them more than absolutely necessary. Don't kill people for being suspicious. Don't kill them for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And if they fight and run away, let them run.
Princess!
Vox chuckled and waved his hands towards her casually, as if shooing away her orders like an unwanted pet.
That's ridiculous! If we did that, we'd be sitting ducks for ambushes and nobody would take us seriously. I'll manage the crews who go out there. You don't need to get blood on your hands, dear. Just let me take care of it.
No!
Charlie snapped, her eyes flashing with furious flame and her horns extending, while her spaded, onyx-black tail cracked like a whip against the air. The overlord in the navy blue suit suddenly went quiet with shock. She hadn't raised her voice at him before. She didn't really like to raise her voice at anyone. But she was getting frustrated by this nonsense. How dare he speak to her in such a way? Razzle stayed in her seat, brooding, and stared daggers at Vox as Charlie stood.
I am tired of being second-guessed and dismissed. Listen, all of you, she said, looking around the table and taking the time to make contact with all of them to ensure they were listening to her.
First, I am not a princess. I am your queen,
and you will treat me with respect, the same as I've shown you. Secondly, I appreciate your opinion and take it under consideration. But when I want something done, you do it. And you do it the way I want you to do it. If I don't want my people harmed, I don't want them harmed. And that should be the end of the matter. Got it?
Her tone rose in intensity as she spoke, the fire in her eyes growing stronger, and her horns extending even further than before, until the final few words she almost shouted at Vox, who actually flinched. Charlie blinked and took a breath. She'd somewhat lost herself to anger in the moment, and like usual, her more full demonic form had begun to emerge as her fury grew. But it had felt different that time. A little more powerful, as if she'd somehow reached a higher state of being. It was over as fast as it had happened, but it made Charlie feel a little tingly in her extremities.
Inescapably, your majesty, my queen, ma'am,
Vox responded quickly, all the sarcasm and pomposity gone from his tone. Charlie looked around at everyone in the room and collected herself, hoping her momentarily shocked expression hadn't betrayed that she wasn't entirely in control of that little outburst. Odette and Rosie just stared at her with a little surprise. But as she regarded them, they looked away from her, seeming almost intimidated by their queen's gaze. Velvet looked at her with slightly raised eyebrows, relaxed but intensely interested. Charlie exhaled, and the last of her overtly demonic features receded back into the depths of her spirit.
All right, she said, taking a deep breath. Thank you. Where had that come from?
She'd been known to let her true demon form out at times when she got too excited or stressed, but it had never been that intense before. For a moment, she'd felt stronger than she ever had, but only for a moment. Charlie made a mental note to look into it later, but first things first.
We're going to start by getting the screens online in the immediate area. Take the square mile around the V-Tower that we've managed to secure and expand it outward. We'll help people with their issues, and we can show them that there are ways to cope beyond the next dopamine high. Ways to find real, sustainable contentment. We expand, embrace new sinners who want to have a better life, help people find their way out of bad situations, and continue to show hell just how great life can be if you give your fellow demon a chance. Vox, could you meet me in my office after this meeting, and we'll talk about the details on these little messages we're going to send out.
Charlie felt a little bad to be committing to a path that involves, well, brainwashing people. But what choice did she have? They never gave her a chance before a few like Angel and Pentheus, and even they weren't as interested in redemption and ascending to heaven as much as simply dodging their own personal problems by hiding at a hotel under the protection of Lucifer's daughter. If she was going to get people to hear her out and actually change their lives in the here and now, she'd need to make them listen, even if it wasn't entirely by choice. Vox nodded to her order and finished the last of his drink before taking the cup and sliding it under the table where it seemingly disappeared.
Of course,
he said, all prim, professional, and polite, sliding their past tension under the rug and trying to play it off with a nervous laugh.
Brainstorming adverts with the Queen of Hell? This'll be an interesting evening. I'll have Marcus brew us some coffee.
Charlie nodded and turned to Velvet.
How soon can you have people on the streets and installing those screens?
The designer shrugged and coiled a bundle of her pink and white hair around one finger before looking sidelong at Odette.
Well, Charlie, I'll get right on it just as soon as I can get those weapons from Miss Four Eyes over there,
she said, smirking as the diminutive blonde glared and pushed her wide, round glasses further up her nose.
I'll have the necessary weapons prepared, Odette said. Given the circumstances and state of hell right now, I guess I can wait for some kind of payment. Have the order on my desk by the end of the day, and I'll have them to you first thing tomorrow.
Velvet smiled, all sweetness. She could be very bubbly when she got what she wanted. It made Charlie almost forget what a ruthless, dangerous overlord she was. At least since a week ago. Maybe, while she was trying to help the rest of Hell work through their destructive, evil habits, she could take some time to help her advisors better themselves as well? What kind of rule could she really hope to conduct, if not even those closest to her truly believed in her ideas? But that was another consideration. For another time, she'd only just stopped them fighting. It was probably best not to rock the boat.
"Great," Charlie said, as they began to stand and move to the door. "That was a productive meeting, everyone. Thanks for coming and putting your trust in me. I promise I won't let any of you down," she called after them.
Odette smiled politely and nodded before wordlessly slipping from the room. Vox tipped his tiny top hat at Charlie and bowed, saying over his shoulder that he would meet her in her office whenever she was ready. Velvet seemed satisfied, and nodded as she left behind Vox.
"It was a good meeting, yeah? Your plan isn't the worst thing I've ever heard. I won't lie to you and say I think it's going to work, but I think it's a good place to start, I suppose. If improving all the wankers out there is really something you want,"
the fashionista said with a shrug. Charlie winced, but smiled through it.
"It's gonna work. You'll see."
As Velvet shrugged and left, Charlie couldn't help but think, just to herself, "It has to, doesn't it?" Rosie stopped at the door and closed it before Charlie could leave with the others. The younger woman staggered to a halt, blinking. Razzle, who hovered at her shoulder, bristled slightly at Rosie coming between Charlie and the exit, but she shushed him. The expression on Rosie's face was strange. With a stitch in the side of her mouth, it was hard to tell if she was sad or angry.
"Charlie, we need to discuss something, dear."
Judging by the tone of her voice, it was probably a bit of both. Charlie knew she was stronger than Rosie, and that since she was indeed the rightful ruler, Rosie couldn't possibly mean to threaten her. But she was tall, and she'd seen the cannibals fight firsthand. If they were dangerous, their matriarch was probably downright deadly.
"Couldn't we have discussed it in front of everyone?"
Charlie asked, but Rosie's sour look only deepened.
"No."
Her tone softened somewhat, and she reached out. Ignoring little Razzle's growl to put a hand on Charlie's shoulder.
"If we talked in front of them, it'd make you look weak. Like I'm telling you what to do, and I don't want to do that to you. Especially not now when you're just finding your footing."
She smirked at Razzle, who grumbled and sat down near Charlie's feet. The queen blinked.
"So you're not going to tell me what to... Oh no, I still am,"
she said, crossing her arms and snapping back to the picture of stern disapproval. She reminded Charlie of what a strict, exacting mother would be like. At least, that's what Charlie thought this was meant to be. She didn't really have experience with maternal figures being strict. The opposite was the norm for her, actually.
"This idea of yours, it's insane,"
Rosie began with an exasperated shake of the head.
"Hell is built on sin. It's built on filth and dirty desires, all being let loose to their full. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll, all that jazz. Even before your father came here, even in the beginning, it was always a place of dirty, degenerate liberty. You can't change that. Especially not with the Hellborn."
"Well, maybe just the sinners,"
Charlie interjected, but Rosie only shook her head.
"The sinners define sin in the first place, Charlie. They're the ones who brought the concept of it here. They're the ones who choose it time and time again. They won't choose no different. Not for you, or themselves, or anyone. I want to help you, sweetheart. I want to make this work for you. But, oy vey, there are some big fish out there. And you're fooling with stuff, upsetting natural orders and collectives older than you, me, everyone here who's following you. Even the oldest of the overlords are infants compared to the Goetian court. And the sins, good grief, Charlie, the sins, they lose their minds. Please, reconsider this nonsense. Just do what your father did. Please, don't let this tragedy become any worse than it already is.
Charlie let that wash over her and considered it for a moment. She hadn't seen the Sins since she was a very little girl, and though everyone sort of knew, through word of mouth, that they controlled practically everything in Hell and were responsible for most of its economic, cultural, and philosophical standards, nobody besides the Sins themselves really knew what their agenda was. They hadn't talked to her father, or by extension her, in years, though. Did they even know of his death? Should she tell them? She thought about it for a while, but Charlie eventually decided explaining her ascension and her plans and all the events that led up to them might be a bad idea. Better to deal with one problem at a time. When she'd established herself further, she could meet with her father's siblings, colleagues, whatever they were. Charlie would be able to come to them as an equal. The last thing she needed was to look weak in front of someone that might want to take the throne from her. Not that she was power-hungry, of course, but she wasn't a total sucker when it came to the laws of succession. If someone else did take the throne, Charlie would always be a threat as the rightful heir. Unless she wanted to be married off, or worse, she'd better keep the authority for herself.
Well, Charlie? Huh? Oh, yes, thank you. I'll take what you said under consideration, Rosie. I appreciate your views. Thank you for sharing them, but I don't want to be my father. I don't want to be an absent ruler. I want to make a change, and I want to prove to them that a soul can get better, or everyone died for nothing.
That, and maybe, just maybe, when she was on top, and she showed Heaven how righteous her rule could be, her power could finally reach far enough to grasp Adam by the wings and drag him down to answer for what he did. That chance, however small, was what kept Charlie going and kept her mind honed and focused, repeating in her mind as Rosie opened the door with a sad sigh.
All right, we'll see what happens, dear. But don't get mad if I say I told you so,
the cannibal woman said. Charlie nodded and followed her out a moment later, Razzle floating after her. Turning the opposite direction as Rosie, she headed towards the office that had been prepared for her in V Tower. A queen's work was never over, after all. She had advisors. She had plans. She had territory. And though it was just a beginning, it at least wasn't the end. She had grasped the silver lining. Now, all Charlie had to do was ride it into tomorrow.